Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Meta. I'm your host, Jay Larson, and joining me this week, we have Aaron Allen. Hello, Aaron. How are you doing?
I'm wonderful. Thanks for inviting me on the show, Jay.
Yeah, you bet. So, Aaron, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to people, for people who may not know you?
Yeah, sure. So, as Jay said, my name's Aaron Allen. I play Convergence of Cyrus. It's the only faction I've ever really played. I tried to play a whole bunch of other factions and failed miserably because they're confusing. Other than that, I like to travel around. I try to hit 5 or 6 big conventions every year. This will be my 3rd time going to the WTC this year. And all in all, I just like the game a lot.
Okay. So just a quick overview of the format. We will have our main episode, which will be 45 or 50 minutes. It will have questions from our Patreon backers, and then we will continue the conversation on the bonus episode for people who support us on Patreon, and continue that conversation.
Perfect.
All right, so first question from Greylord Dave. If you were going to try to sell Convergence as a faction for a competitive player to try, what would you say?
He also says,
what is their USP?
USP?
Unique selling position, I believe. I'm guessing.
Okay. I personally find that Convergence of Cyrus is fundamentally one of the best balanced factions out there. Like between
you just
me and
lost
the other
all the competitive players.
The best internally balanced faction out there, I should say. The other factions are great and in whatever meta that's going on, but between me and the other competitive Convergence players, we all have very different opinions on how this should be played. And we all do well with the way that we build our lists. And for me, that's a really big selling point, because the way I like to play the Convergence may not be the way that you like to play Convergence, but they both perform well in the tournament scene. And in my opinion, that is the best selling point for playing Convergence competitively.
What would you say are some of the biggest differences that you've seen with how different competitive players approach Convergence of Cyrus?
So Peter Lippart really loves running Mother with Backlash and all those tricks. Watt loves to run really, really grindy lists that are just all about making his opopponent hate life 2.5 hours down the road. And both of those are really wonderful playstyles. My playstyles usually lean more towards either heavy alpha or assassination playstyles. And I can also do those.
Okay, so our next question comes from Zeno. He says, with their high point costs, are the super juniors worth it?
Absolutely. I think anybody that can take a super junior should be taking a super junior in at least one of their 2 lists. Right now, my pairing includes both a Nemo and a Lich 4, or Asphyxius 4. I'm having a blast with them. They do everything I want them to do, and probably 10% more. And I honestly think that, like, if you play Signar, Convergence, Mercenaries, or Krix, they should be in at least one of your 2 lists.
So his follow-up question is, assuming the answer is yes, when would they not be worth it?
If you're running a skew that they don't support, like... like Nemo 4, he's a good gun, but he's an electrical gun. So if you're running a strong gun line, but you're avoiding electrical guns for whatever reason, and you don't have very many units, maybe you don't want to put Nemo 4 in, because he's an 18 point model plus the jack that you have to put on him. Lich 4. Or Gaspy 4, excuse me. I don't know why I call him Lich. Gaspy 4.
It's kind of funny that you're like, oh, excuse me, not not this nickname. Let me use another nickname instead of his actual name, which is Asphyxius.
That's fair. I suppose I can use any of the names, right? As long as everybody knows what we're talking about. Gatsby 4, you know, again, probably doesn't want to be in a gun line because he wants to be a melee thing. But I could still see shooing him into a gun line list because he can be a really good centerpiece that just is there that your opponents have to deal with. And he has a huge threat range. So specific SKU lists. There has to be a very dedicated reason why you're choosing not to put them in the list.
All right. So his next question is, what non-standard but interesting jack options would you consider for each?
They're still new enough that I by no means think the headspace is fully explored yet. So I'll speak to what I've done, and I encourage other people to try other interesting things. So far, I'm really enjoying running Asphyxius with a Shrike because it's cheap, and the list I'm putting it in is very tight on points, so that's a struggle for me. But also, like, who doesn't love just, like, bowling around the table, trampling over anything and everything, and doing damage to it all, and just having a blast with it? So I like that with Gatsby 4. Nemo, I really, really like the idea of Dynamo with Nemo, and obviously, I mean, he's bonded to him. I don't know that it'll ever be a standard option because that's a really expensive point package. That's like, I want to say it's about 36 points together. I mean, that's a colossal. But I just really like the idea of running the two of them together. It's cute. Yeah, that's what I got so far.
Okay. So his next couple questions kind of tie into the new theme force. I believe Strange Bedfellows is the name. Is that correct?
That is the name of the new theme force. Absolutely.
Okay. So I guess first off, maybe let's lay a little bit of a foundation on this discussion. And can you give maybe a quick overview of this theme list?
Sure. So the army composition, the rules of it are you can have any Aurora Warcaster, so Aurora 1, and soon to be Aurora 2. And you can have any Morton Ever Warcasters, which would be Morton Ever 1, Morton Ever 2. You can have non-character Mercenary Warjacks. You can have non-character Convergence Warjacks. Morton Ever Warcaster can also include non-character Krix Warjacks in their battle group. You have the Convergence Angel model units. You have Convergence Optifex units. You have Krix Thrall model units. You have Signar Stormsmith solos and units. Mercenary models and units that will work with Convergence. You have Convergence solos and Convergence battle engines. So that's a very wide yet specific amalgam of things that can be thrown together. The benefits are the requisition points specifically are you can take one Warjack with a point cost 6 or less for free. You can get a unit of Convergence Angels for free, or you can get a smaller medium-based solo for free. And the special rules to the theme force are that all models in this army are considered to be Convergence and Mercenary models. Non-servitor solos in this army gain Swift Vengeance, which is if one or more friendly warrior models were destroyed or removed from play by an enemy attack within 5 inches of that model, the model with Swift Vengeance gets a 3-inch advance and a basic melee attack during maintenance phase. And then when a model in this army is affected by the repair special rule, remove one additional point of damage.
So I guess before we get to a couple of his questions related to this, I guess I want your opinion on something, or to maybe disabuse me of something if possible, if it needs to be. But okay. I kind of feel like part of my issue with this theme force isn't necessarily so much with the theme force per se. It's more that it kind of feels like it suffers from an issue of comparison, in that it feels kind of natural with this cross faction theme force to compare it to some of the other ones that are available. And it kind of feels like when you compare this to Warriors of the Old Faith or Flames of Darkness, that you're kind of like, oh, well, this is kind of cool, I guess, but not nearly as cool as these other theme forces. And do you think that's fair, or am I just missing something, or should I just not even be trying to make that comparison and just kind of trying to judge it on its own merits?
No, I think that's fair. I do think that's fair. It's I think Strange Bedfellows is very cute, and I think there's some fun things that can be done with it. But like, Warriors of the Old Faith is a really good theme force. Yeah. And I don't know that this is the same level of awesome.
And I think the thing that that just seemed weird to me when I was like looking at this and thinking about playing it and stuff like that was that, you know, I look at it and with both those other theme forces, there's some really good caster choices that you can play with them and some things that are pretty exciting. And it's been a long time since I've heard anyone excited about Morton Opera. And like, I understand that there's people who will always hold that torch for Aurora and try to make her work, but
Aurora is amazing now.
Okay, we'll get to that later, but like it feels to me like one of the biggest stumbling blocks for it is just kind of how limited the caster choice is on it.
I absolutely agree. It's very, I mean, Morton Abra's fun to play, Aurora's fun to play, but like, they're not A-tier casters. They're not S-tier casters. So you're setting yourself up in a position where, you know, what you're playing can win, but you need to know what you're playing very well to make it win. As opposed to, you know, if, you know, P-Scar was in this theme force, you could put P-Scar in here and, you know, anything you put in the list is probably going to do really well.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, so... go ahead.
Yes, I agree. I agree with you. It's not as awesome as some of the other combined arms theme forces.
And I'll also say that, so for example, Vlad III has been pretty popular in Warriors of the Old Faith, and I wouldn't say that he's a caster that has been. He wasn't exactly taking the competitive scene by storm prior to Warriors of the Old Faith. But
it's true.
He is still a really good caster. So I don't know. All right. So with that as kind of the foundation of the discussion, here's a couple more follow up questions from Zeno. He sure. says, "How can we best use our Krix infantry?"
I mean, Krix infantry are really good at one thing. For the most part, that's dying. And I feel like the goal of them, if you're using the Thralls, is to be in the way and get a couple good attacks out of them. And she sends them, like, if you use Aurora 1, they go really fast. And then you have, you know, support behind them to take advantage of things when they die, because all of your solos are going to have Swift Vengeance. That would be the direction I would probably look towards with Krix infantry, unless you're also including Soul Eaters in that. The are they called Soul Eaters? Is that what they're called? Soul Hunters. Soul Hunters seems kind of cool as well, because they go really far. They're speed 9 cav that you can give flight to, and you can boost their attacks off of Aurora, and then they repo out of the way, and that just feels really good and really dirty.
All right. So his next question is, When would you use Morton Opera 1 or 2?
I don't have a good answer for that. Give me a minute. So I can see a place for Morton Opera 1 in Strange Bedfellows running a light spam list. You know, she has the ability to give them ghostly, and she improves the armor of lights. And if you have hard hitting lights, like maybe our new melee lights that showed up in Convergence, Those seem kind of cute and really awesome together. She has Overrun, which allows you to get really deep and things like that. And in addition, like, I mean, she has ways to repair Drax, which is useful for lights that don't have a whole bunch of boxes. I don't know about Morton Abra 2. Maybe if I was going to go Morton Abra 2, it might be a gun line with her. Spell Piercer's an amazing ability for gun lines. Failsafe is awesome for a Jack. You can throw it in there, put like a blockader under gas before with block with a failsafe, so it's gonna work until it doesn't work. She has Curse of Shadows. It's Strange Bedfellows. You can also put a Hermit in there. You can have Void Archons in there. You have a whole bunch of armor adjustments in there, and things are gonna punch really hard. I could see something like that looking fun to play.
All right, so I guess as a foundation a little bit for our next discussion, let's talk a little bit about, so there are, first off, there's two new Jacks that just barely released, and we delayed talking, or me inviting you onto this podcast until we had the release of these, so that we would have a little bit more to talk about. We don't yet have the final stats for Aurora 2 or the Negation Angels, but basically everything else in this wave we have the stats for. So the two new Jacks are the Tessellator and the Negator. Mm-hmm. And can you give a quick overview of those two Jacks?
Sure. So they're both on the same chassis, which is it's a light chassis, base speed 7, defense 13, armor 15, and 22 boxes. The grid is the same as the Galvanizer's grid. They also both have flight, and they both have repo 3. The Negator has flank Negator, so it gets +2 to attack rolls and gains an additional damage die when it's being flanked with another Negator. And it also has crit amputation, which is cute. It has 2 attacks. They're both half-inch reach at POW 10, or P plus S 10. The Tessellator has volume fire, so it's a ranged chassis instead. It has volume fire. It has 2 initial attacks, and they both have reload 1, at range 9, POW 10. They're pretty straightforward jacks. So that's the introduction to them. Do we have questions about them, or should I just keep talking about them?
I keep talking slash, yeah, I mean, go ahead and say if there's anything else, okay. Any other thoughts you have with them.
I'm personally excited about getting to play them. My personal plan is probably going to be to have between 6 and 10 of them available to me, 6 and 10 of both of them available to me, because they are designed to be ran in groups of 3 as a minimum. And I don't think it's reasonable to run them in pairs. I don't think they will get enough work done in pairs. I think you're going to want them in at least trios, and the ability to run a couple sets of trios, it's obviously a skew, but, it feels worthwhile, and it feels like it, will be very good.
So why do you feel that these are jacks that like being trios as opposed to singly or in pairs?
Because in CID discussions with Privateer Breast, they told me, point of fact, their goal was they wanted them to run in groups of 3, of at least 3. But also, if you look at the math, it's like the Tessellator, POW 10, volume fire. So it's going to be a POW 13 against a heavy. It has short range. I mean, it has repo 3, so it's going to be 9 inches away from whatever it shoots. Let's assume it repos straight backwards. It's now 12 inches away from whatever it killed. That is definitely within charge range of anything worth its salt. And it's a light. It's a 13-15. So the odds of it surviving a heavy charging into it are low. If you take average armor of 19 on a heavy, you're doing dice off 6. So you're going to be doing 4, 8, 12 damage per tessellator without any buffs from other places. So it would take three of them to remove a heavy at range. And if you look at the math on the negators, it's similar-ish with flank. You're going to want to put three of them into a heavy, two and a half of them into a heavy to reliably kill a heavy. So looking at running them in groups makes a lot of sense, which is one reason why their reposition three is really awesome, because they're going to want to group up, do their thing, and then spread back out so that your opponent can't pull all three of them for the price of whatever they just did.
Okay, so we have a question from Zap Brannigan, who says, what existing caster will get the most out of the new Jack releases?
The most. I would hazard Cyntherian might get the most. Tessellators are great. Negators are great. They're great for everybody. But I've been toying with a list with Cyntherian that is both negators and tessellators. And I feel like it might actually give him some competitive playability, because you get to do, hot shot on a tessellator, moving them around helps increase their viability. Magnetic hold is available. Cyntherian's feat is kind of a little bit wasted there, but also like it's an interesting combined list between melee and ranged. And that's not to say that the Jacks won't be good for every other caster, because, like, Aurora wouldn't mind having negators in the list. Lucant loves negators. Orion, Iron Mother, gonna love having tessellators. Axis is gonna love having negators. So they are useful everywhere. I just think Cyntherian might get more out of it than everybody else, just because he's a little farther down in that pecking order right now.
All right, so to prep some more of the discussion, can you talk a little bit about the units that are coming out with this wave of releases?
Yeah, so we're getting the one new unit, the
Negation Angels.
Negation Angels, thank you. My brain just blanks. They are a 3-man unit. They cost 6 points. They have the base, the same stat line as the other angels, which is 14-12, I believe. Let me double check. Yes, 14-12. They have blade shield. They have flight. They have a spray that has crit paralysis, and their melee attack is, I believe, POW 10 with just straight up paralysis on it.
All right, go ahead. So his question is, which existing casters will get the most use out of this new unit?
Existing caster will get most use out of it will probably be Axis or Aurora. Aurora, because these things are useful because they're an angel unit, so they trigger her flank. But also being able to paralyze things is awesome. Axis, because just having a cheap contesting unit that doubles to paralyze things is awesome. Because one of the things Axis can struggle with has been Scorn with Double Turtle or, Mammoths in that list as well. Like Scorn running an amalgam of Battle Engines or Colossals that he can't necessarily deal with all of them. And being able to paralyze a living thing really helps that out.
All right, so next question from Seth Bai. He says, what are your thoughts on Nemo 4 with heavies or lights?
I am currently struggling putting things other than lights on Nemo 4 because I've been trying to put them into the Orion list that I've been using that has a whole bunch of electrical guns. And I don't want to give up my Colossal. So it makes it very difficult in that aspect. That said, like, it, if you just put lights on him, then the light, if you just put a light on him, then you use the light for a throwaway function, probably a firefly to give extra damage elsewhere, or maybe he leaps somewhere. And then you just use him to hold his own, and he does that very well the entire game. If you put a heavy on him, I mean, he will absolutely run a heavy very well. He probably won't run more than two heavies very well, because you don't want to be giving out too much of his focus. He'd like to be able to hold on to things. But you could put, you could run two heavies on him very well and not worry about them being going inert because of him dying. And his control range is big enough that if one of those things is a colossal, you can pretty much threaten anywhere on the board with that thing and not worry about it. I will say I don't know that the jacks should be convergence jacks. There's weird issues when trying to induct with jacks that are on Super Juniors, because induction is battle group limited, so you can't induct out of there. You can only induct within itself, and that can cause order of operation issues or allocation issues.
Yeah, it seems like losing power up would be a pretty big deal if you're not, and like the Super Juniors aren't in general going to want to be running a huge battle group on their own, I'm assuming.
Probably not. I mean, I could see Nemo running a bunch of tessellators. Like you can take focus off of a corollary and put it into his battle group, because the power transferability doesn't specify Warjack in the battle group, so you can say hand that out, but then you can't get it back to the corollary. So then at that point you're using your caster's focus to feed your junior's battle group, which is potentially viable, but it's just, it's an extra complication and it's something to be aware of. So you probably don't.
So next, this kind of ties in, but a follow-up question from Zap Brannigan. Are there any jacks that Nemo 4 and or Gatsby 4 can bring that you're excited to play in Convergence?
Yes. There's a ton of them. And I'm like, I haven't even finished exploring the headspace. I'm excited to have access to a blockader. Like, let's just start with Nemo 4. I'm excited to, you know, to have access to Dynamo. I'm excited to have, Chargers are really cool on him. Firefly is awesome. Another form of ionization available to me. That's super great. Tauros are useful. Countercharge, awesome. It's great. You know, there's a whole bunch of really cool options. Running a Stormclad, that seems cute as well in electrical lists. If we move on to Gatsby 4, you have, you know, Stalkers. So that's what they're called, right? iPad. Yeah, you have Stalkers. You have the Shrike, which I'm absolutely loving right now. I'm kind of interested in running, what's his jack? His character jack. Cankerworm. Cankerworm seems kind of interesting, with Lich 4, in Convergence. Just cause, I mean, we have diffusers, we have other things that we can do to kind of remotely help it a little bit. I don't know if it's good, but it sounds fun. Putting a blockader on Gatsby 4, I'm super excited for. Like, there's a ton of options this has opened up, and like, you don't need to, but I personally have taken a step back and I'm like, I have the world to play with now, and it's so exciting.
So is there something specifically about Asphyxius and the blockader that you're looking forward to, other than just the blockader's really good for its points?
The blockader's really good for its points. I mean, so arm 19, it's hitting at POW 24 because of Dark Shroud, and obviously it has the 2d3 sprays. You're probably running it in Strange Bedfellows, which means you have access to a hermit, and a blockader behind or a hermit behind a blockader makes it even harder to kill the blockader, because I just choose one of your charge attacks that you don't get a roll on, and then, you know, I don't care if the hermit dies thereafter. So, yeah.
Okay. So, next set of questions. Seto Midor says, what are the three top competitive lists, in your opinion, in the game right now? And how do you tech your list to be stronger into those three? Related, do you have any dodges with your pair?
Flames is really strong right now. Infernals is strong right now. What's the third most competitive list right now? I'm trying to think.
I would guess that most people would guess something from either Manoth or Scorn.
Probably. I feel like the meta right now is actually very, very diffuse. There's a lot of different, you know, outside of Flames and outside of Infernals, I feel like there's a huge diffusion of lists and lists that are doing well. And I'm actually pretty happy about that. But sorry, back to his question. I don't spend a lot of time specifically teching my lists to go into the meta lists. I will consider them when I'm building my lists, but I'm building my lists currently because I really like playing them. And if there's a problem for me, I just need to be aware of it and be practiced into it. You know, if I've played, like, one of my dodges right now, and it's a terrible dodge to have, is Retribution Double Trident. My list pairing does not do very well into that. It's not to say I can't beat that list, but, like, I need to have 40 or 50 reps into that list to know how all of my turns work compared to the rep player who, I don't know, if he has 10 games, probably going to do pretty well into me. So I need to be aware of the power lists, and I need to know what pieces in their lists I need to kill to make my list playable and what trades I need to make that happen. Are there any
pieces or models that you have specifically been adding to your list because of things that you know are common or strong in the meta?
Yes. So in my pairing with Aurora, I have a James in the list, and her job is to hunt void, or is to hunt Archons, not necessarily void Archons, just any Archon that's on the table. James by herself does very well at one rounding most Archons. And, that's pretty good. I mean, you put them as the prey, it makes her a Mat 9, Pal 13 weapon master with two attacks. And sidestep and parry. So, like, she can get to really awesome places. She does quite a bit of damage. You know, if I need to boost the damage on the second attack, if I need to boost a hit, I'm running her with Aurora, so I have Arcane Might, so that is an option. So, you know, she might require a little bit of help from Aurora to get it done, but she's very good at doing that. And if I remove an Archon and then lose James, I feel like that's a fair trade.
So are there... His follow-up question was, is there anything that you feel like you kind of need to dodge with your pair?
Yeah. I don't want to play Rhett Double Trident, and I don't really want to play Kruger 2. They're playable games, but it's like a 30-70 against me, and I prefer to avoid those odds.
And what is it about those two casters or matchups in particular that tends to be a problem for your pairing?
Those pairings both telegraph which list I have to play. So the Double Trident list, I can't play Aurora into because I'm running two units of infantry and I have very, very weak ranged game. So if my opponent is smart, and I always assume my opponent will be smart, we're just going to put two tridents together on one side of the board and just shove them down my throat. And I won't be able to stop them. They will pick up entire units at a time. So I have to play Orion. And that means I'm shooting into a ret list. And it's probably, what's his name? The Gear Shield 4. So it's probably also a gun line with more jam than I have, and it's just, it's a rough match. So I just prefer to avoid that. The Kruger list, he has Windstorm. He has all his stuff within 9 inches is immune to electricity. My Orion shooting list is nothing but electricity. So it's very hard for me to play that list into Kruger. I would have to get up to and beat him up in melee with POW 14 jacks. That doesn't feel good. So instead, I have to drop Aurora into that list. And I don't know if you know this or not, Kruger's very good at screwing around with units.
Interesting.
So it becomes a very difficult, grindy game that I have to play perfectly, and my opponent just has to wait for me to screw up.
Fair enough. So
I'm sure there's other things I have that are dodges out there, but I haven't encountered them yet.
Sure. So Jacob says, what should you run Asphyxius for with Jackwise, and what are your thoughts for Locke in conversions lists? So maybe start off with Asphyxius, Jackwise.
Okay. Depends on what the goal of Asphyxius is for. So if Asphyxius himself is supposed to be the center point of the army, run one, maybe two lights in the list, or under his battle group, and just have them hold a zone, maybe use them to remove a key solo or two, or use a shrike, unjam your other stuff. Things that are very low, have very low requirements from Asphyxius himself.
Real quick, can I pause you and have you give a rundown real quick of what Asphyxius does? Because I think he's...
Sure.
You know, he's new on the scene, and I think that he's a model that, like you've said, if he's an option for you to take, he should probably be in one of your two lists, and so people are going to likely be seeing a lot more of him coming up.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That makes a ton of sense. So, first of all, he's a unit. He's a super junior that has three models that come with him. His baseline stats are he's a speed 6, mat 7, defense 14, armor 17. He has command 9. He has flight. His weapon is a PS 16. His spells are Caustic Mist, which is place a 3-inch AoE and corrode things. He has flicker, which places him and his unit within 2 inches of their current location. He has hellfire, which is a POW 14 nuke that... disallows tough and at RFPs, which by the way is really, really exciting for convergence, because this is the first access to RFP we have. His unit are Annihilation Servitors. They are speed 6, oops, lost the page, speed 6, mat 5, def 12, arm 13. They also have flight. And their weapons are called Murder Blades. They just do an auto point of damage. They have Murderous, so they gain an additional die on attack rolls against warrior models. And then the other thing that I haven't covered on Gatsby himself is that while Gatsby is around, this model and its units, and Warjacks and its battle group gain Dark Shroud. And then additionally, while base to base with this model, a Warjack and its battle group can spend focus points on it. So that's most of what happens. His weapon, Asphyxius himself, collects souls within 2 inches because he's Asphyxius. So he can go above his 5 fury stat limit. And then his murder bots also collect souls for him. I guess he's a focus 5, and he has 17 boxes, which is a huge number of boxes for a junior to have. So that's him. That's his package, which is a lot to swallow.
Okay, so I think we'll maybe pause there, and when we go into the next episode, we will talk a little bit about why, with when you take all that together, why he's good, why you're likely to see him so frequently, and what he's going to be trying to do. But that'll be something to tune in to on the next episode. Aaron, I wanted to thank you very much for joining us and imparting some of your knowledge and wisdom with us.
Of course. Always a pleasure, Jay. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Please feel free to check out Discount Games, Inc. and check out Muzon Minis. We are both still shipping things during the shutdown, so feel free to keep ordering. And thank you to everyone who is backing the podcast on Patreon. You guys are awesome, and we appreciate it very much.